Our study tonight is out of Acts chapter 24, verse 24 to chapter 25, verse 12, understanding God's use of strong evil opposition. The book of Acts explains the orderly and sovereignly directed progress of the kingdom message from Jews to Gentiles and from Jerusalem to Rome. We can thus learn much about aligning our ministry efforts with God's sovereign work from studying the book of Acts. Acts 24:24 to 25:12 records how Paul faced strong evil opposition, but how God used it to fulfill his will. And we view the passage for our insight, our application, and edification as follows. I want to read the passage, and then we'll look at it. Acts 24, verse 24 to 25:12. And after certain days, when Felix came with his wife Drusilla, which was a Jewess, he sent for Paul and heard him concerning the faith in Christ. And as he reasoned of righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come, Felix trembled and answered, "Go thy way for this time. When I have convenient season, I will call for you." He hoped also that money should have been given him from Paul that he might release him. Wherefore he sent for him the oftener and communed with him. But after 2 years, Porcius Festus came into Felix's room, and Felix, willing to show the Jews a pleasure, left Paul bound. Now when Festus was come into the province, after 3 days he ascended up from Caesarea to Jerusalem. Then the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul, and besought him, and desired favor against him, that he would send for him to Jerusalem, laying wait in the way to kill him. But Festus answered that Paul should be kept in Caesarea, and that he himself would depart shortly there. "Let them therefore," said he, "which among you are able, go down with me and accuse this man, if there be any wickedness in him." And when he had tarried among them more than 10 days, he went down unto Caesarea, and the next day, sitting in the judgment seat, commanded Paul to be brought. And when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood around about, and laid many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. While he answered for himself, "Neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar have I offended anything at all." But Festus, willing to do the Jews a pleasure, answered Paul and said, "Wilt thou then go up to Jerusalem, and there be judged of these things before me?" Then said Paul, "I stand in Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews I've done no wrong, as you very well know. For if I be an offender or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal to Caesar." Then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, "Hast thou appealed to Caesar? And to Caesar thou shalt go." In Acts 24, 24 to 25:9, Paul faced a series of strong evil opposition pressures. First of all, he faced prolonged sinful opposition from Judea's procurator Felix in Acts 24:24 to 27. Felix had heard Paul's case and decided to postpone making a ruling on it to avoid the political hazard of publicly critiquing Jerusalem's religious authorities who had brought charges against Paul. So Felix continued to stall on making a ruling. He repeatedly called for Paul to hear him speak on the Christian faith, hoping that Paul might bribe him, that Felix might release Paul. Incidentally, we know a lot about Felix from secular history. He was very corrupt, and he was very open to being bribed. This is very typical of his personality. Nevertheless, Paul's words critiqued Felix's sinfulness, causing him to tremble, to where he dismissed Paul and directed that he would hear him later. Felix's conviction is understandable in view of his life. He was on his third marriage, and to marry his current wife, a Hebrew woman named Drusilla, he had to break up another marriage. His regime was marked by injustices, and he wholly lacked self-control. He was known as a man who just did not have any self-control at all. So to please the Hebrews, Felix left Paul in prison, and after 2 years, Festus replaced him. So this has been something like a stall. This has stalled Paul's ministry for 2 years. Paul then faced another trial with Felix's successor, Festus, with even greater enmity from his foes. 3 days after becoming Judea's procurator, Festus went up from Caesarea to Jerusalem, where the high priest and the leaders of the Jews informed him of their charges against Paul. They asked that Festus bring Paul to Jerusalem and try him there, hoping to ambush and kill Paul along the way. Now, of course, Paul would have remembered that they had originally tried to ambush him just going from the fortress there just north of the temple complex down to the Sanhedrin. And so he knew good and well it was going to be very, very dangerous to move him in a direction that the Jews knew he would be moved. Boy, they were going to kill him for sure. So Festus replied that Paul needed to remain in Caesarea. That must have been of the Lord. But he asked that Paul's critics return with him to Caesarea to bring their charges against Paul there, and that Festus would hear the case there. Paul's Hebrew foes then returned to Caesarea with Festus. When the case was convened, they stood around about Paul and brought many serious charges against him that they couldn't prove. Paul argued in his defense that he had not committed any offense against the Mosaic law of the Hebrews, not against the Jerusalem temple, nor against Caesar. It's interesting, these are the same basic charges that they had given originally, that Paul had violated the law, that he had defamed the temple, and that he was an insurrectionist against Caesar. So nothing's new. They just made more charges up with the same area. For their charges apparently being the same that had made this previous trial before Felix, but now with enhanced rancor and hatred. Paul faced an incredibly dangerous crisis full of evil intrigue by a political move by Festus. As the newly appointed procurator of Israel, Festus wanted to do the Hebrews a favor, so he asked Paul if he would go to Jerusalem to be tried by him there on the charges that Paul's Hebrew foes had made. Now this is very, very dangerous if implemented, and it would prove to be harmful to Paul for a variety of reasons. Number one, Paul's foes had once plotted to kill him when he moved from one place to another, even in the city of Jerusalem. So they surely would kill him if he went from Caesarea up to Jerusalem. It's about 40, 45 miles up there, so they had plenty of room to ambush Paul, especially as they got up closer to the city of Jerusalem. You have these narrow passes, and they could shoot down from high on top and maybe take out a bunch of the Roman soldiers. And, of course, Festus would not have been aware of that. Then were Paul even to arrive safely in Jerusalem, the possibility of a fair trial there was remote, because he's surrounded by people who absolutely hated him. So it was very, very dangerous. And then Paul had been stalemated as a prisoner in Caesarea for 2 years, and he wanted to get out of it. I mean, he was trying to make progress, and he'd been stuck in prison for 2 years. He wanted to get out of there, and I don't blame him one bit. Well, Paul answered Festus that since he stood before Caesar's tribunal, where he ought to be tried, since he had done nothing wrong to the Jews, as he said they knew well, but that if he had done anything worthy of death, he did not want to escape death. But since no one could rightly give Paul up to the Hebrews, what a trial in Jerusalem would clearly entail, he would use his Roman citizenship right to appeal to Caesar. This is one of the most valuable parts of Roman citizenship. If you were in a trial situation, you thought you weren't going to get a fair trial, you could appeal to Caesar, and Caesar himself would have to try you as a Roman citizen. This is a very prized part of the citizenship, and Paul used it at this particular point. Well, Festus had no legal alternative but to announce that Paul would be tried by Caesar. Now, there's an argument as to whether or not Festus could have gone ahead and refused Paul at this point. If he had refused him, Paul could have superseded the refusal and appealed to Caesar because he had that Roman citizenship. So one way or another, eventually he had to, Festus had to turn Paul over to Caesar. So he talked with his counsel and got the advice from his counsel, and he said, you've appealed to Caesar? To Caesar you shall go. Now, what's amazing is that every single one of these strong evil pressures that Paul faced at Caesarea that led him to appeal to Caesar fit God's revealed will back in Acts chapter 23, verse 11. I'm going to go back there. In Acts 23, 11, the Lord himself, the Lord Jesus, appeared to Paul. And this verse, part of it is in red letters. It's a red letter edition because this is where the Lord is speaking. And this is after Paul had been in the Sanhedrin. But in verse 11 it says, "The night following, the Lord stood by him and said, Be of good cheer, Paul, for as thou hast testified of me in Jerusalem, so must thou also bear witness at Rome." Now the word must is very strong. It's a Greek word, delta epsilon iota. We would spell it D-E-I. It means of necessity. You of necessity must go there. If that's the case, and this is the Lord saying, it's absolutely necessary that you testify of me in Rome, Paul knew that he couldn't die until at least he got to Rome, no matter what. And this is going to carry Paul over through the shipwreck that he goes through and everything else, because the Lord has said, you're going to make a testimony of me in Rome. So that's the Lord's will. The Lord had told Paul in a vision that he must, delta epsilon iota, he must testify of him in Rome. We use must as an adverb, but de is actually, it's almost a verb itself. It is necessary for. So the lesson is the strong evil opposition that Paul faced during his imprisonment in Caesarea was used of God to move Paul to appeal for a trial before Caesar, that God might get Paul to Rome to minister in line with his revealed will. So if we face strong evil opposition, may we know that God is merely using it to fulfill his plan for us. I got into a discussion this afternoon. Two of our deacons have been holding membership classes, and they had the third membership class today, the last one. And so next Sunday is when the board is going to be examining the people for membership. But I talked with this one deacon who had been involved in leading the group, and he said, there's one couple that's going to be joining the church that we're going to recommend to the board to join and everything. What really impacted them most was they had been looking for Bible and for Bible teaching. The first Sunday they showed here, we have that little introduction, that theological introduction that we do, where we go through the beliefs of our church. And what we did in giving that information, it encapsulated the Christian faith. They've been looking for something like that for a long time, and that really sold them on it. The amazing thing about that whole theological spiel developed as a result of a whole bunch of criticisms. Let me go through this. When I first came to the Nepog Church, not every sermon dealt with the gospel, of course. I was into Bible teaching. And so there was a man in the church at the time who says, you know, and the name of our church is Nepog Congregational Church. He said, a lot of times people show up at this church because they don't know the gospel. They think it's a run-of-the-mill congregational church or congregationalists. So you don't want to skip ever giving the gospel. Always give the gospel. And I said, well, the problem with that is a lot of times in the Bible teaching, the message itself doesn't deal with the gospel. But let me think about it, and I'll come up with a solution. So I thought, you know, in the introduction, I'll go ahead and give the gospel in the introduction. So I decided, well, I'll do that. And then I gradually began to work in the sermon as well. Well, when someone heard that in the introduction, they said, well, Pastor, if you're going to talk about the gospel, talk about eternal security. A lot of us have had and before you know it, they're adding this and adding this. So we started adding all of this stuff, all of this theology in the introduction. And I was just trying to, you know, make peace and keep peace within the body. Well, unbeknownst to me, the Lord was allowing that to develop so that when we get to the point where we are today, it would actually affect newcomers and would give them encapsulated a belief system that they've been looking for. So I stand amazed. This type of thing also happened with our food pantry. It's out there. Now, the food pantry started because of COVID and the shutdown and the way it hurt food and everything. That cage out there, that actually used to be a rabbit cage. It used to be a rabbit cage. There was a fellow who used to work in come to our church. His name was Coach. That was his nickname. He had built this rabbit cage, and apparently he never used it. And Mr. Hinman saw over there, and he thought, he came with the idea, we need to make that into a pantry. And, you know, this is an idea that Pete came up with. He's sort of an inventor anyway. So he got the approval of a board, and we put the food pantry in there. Well, lo and behold, this started a movement because there are several other churches in the county that are actually started to do that and use that. And I've actually seen situations where I'll see a lady show up and she unloads the stuff. Another lady comes right behind her. She's taking it. And she's thanking this lady, and this lady said, "You're welcome. I don't even know either of these people, and yet I'm the pastor of the church." So it's become sort of a community give all and take all. And who knows where that's going to lead. But that started because of a sort of a downer situation. You know, people have questioned whether or not we should have even been quarantined. But anyway, through that, the Lord has utilized that, and it's opened up opportunities to make contacts with people. So, like Paul, we need to be careful. The Lord was using all of this opposition to get him, to spur him, to rely on his Roman citizenship so that he would appeal to Caesar. That's what God wanted, so he could move. And we need to remember, even if we run into opposition, that's something that the Lord allows because he's got a purpose in it. So we should never get discouraged, never get defeated because we run into trouble or criticism or whatever, because God can use that, and he wants to use it to his glory and to his honor. He always has a tendency, the Lord does, he always has a tendency to take every event that occurs and make something positive out of it. He always is thinking in the forward direction. So we should never give up. We should always look for the silver lining on the cloud, if there's a cloud that is allowed to come our way, because there is a silver lining.